just to launch this conversation.
This is our playground.
They have spontaneous conversations. They don't plan this.
I mean, there's actually something sort of spiritual about that.
What's he do? He's a human being.
Yeah, I'm a sexist feminist.
We should be friends.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters all around the planet. Welcome to the latest edition of the Robin Callie Show here on talkradio.nyc. We are live on Facebook Live, which is really fun as we start ramping up and getting more accustomed to saying hi to you all visually as well as auditorily, even though half of our faces are cut off in our shot right now. But welcome, everybody.
When is Facebook going to make it to where you can do a side shot? I know. Huh? I mean,
right,
come
right
on.
Now we're just, we're
dude,
still,
get your act together over there. Forget about fake news. People need to see the whole picture. And, literally.
Short of Rob and I kind of sitting on each other's laps, we're going to have to, you know, we're still working it out over
That's
here.
Right.
Still working it out.
That's right.
So we want to welcome everybody, our loyal listeners. Tonight we have a really nice smattering of people from all around the globe. We have Russia, Spain, Romania, Germany, Japan, Korea, Cairo, Egypt, and a whole variety of places around the United States, including New Jersey, Florida, Massachusetts, and Indiana. So we welcome all of you. It's always exciting to think that we are speaking to our global network, our tapestry, right?
It's actually so timely because I just came from a meetup group where it was about languages and people go to practice languages. And so I was wearing the flag from Spain to let people know I was practicing Spanish.
Oh, nice.
So it's talking to a girl who's visiting from Finland, living in Brooklyn, just lived in Australia, speaking Spanish to her, and she's about to head to California. So that was a global conversation.
Wow, you're very international.
Let me tell you something.
Very worldly, my dear.
Double O Rob. Yeah.
So I want to acknowledge the summer solstice, which
I
still think is tomorrow, but somehow I've had a few solstice wishes today. So happy summer to everybody. It's really probably one of my top two or three favorite days of the year, because I have inner paganism in my bones in terms of like the appreciation of the seasons and the planets. And the idea specifically for summer solstice is that because it's the day that enjoys the longest amount of the biggest amount of daylight, that it's a good time to sort of shine a light on the things that you want to grow in your life and to kind of meditate and think about that and have a little extra special intention, you know. And plus, I've had the pleasure of traveling around the world on summer solstices when I was younger and cooler in my bohemian era, my bohemian phase. Not that that's gone too far away. But in other countries like England, for
what
example.
What do you mean when you were cooler? I mean, come on.
I said
you
bohemian.
You mean when you were just learning to be cool,
yes,
by being
I
who
was.
You were.
I just, you know, I like to stay in nicer hotels now. It's probably the only difference.
Right, okay.
And my meals are maybe a little more expensive. But, you know, in certain countries, I keep thinking of England, and Stonehenge is the most obvious iconic place for these festivities to go on. But some of the things I've seen, people showing up and really honoring this day. So I just want to give a shout out to the summer solstice.
There you go. Happy summer, y'all.
Yeah.
I want to go swimming. That's what I want to do. I'm all about swimming the beach this summer.
Oh, boy.
Yup.
Get your bikini out.
Is that what you wear?
No, I'm talking to you.
I like trunks myself. Yeah, I got some cool trunks. So. Anyway, so tonight's show, we have a great show. We have such a great guest who is such a good old friend of mine. She's young, but she's an old friend of mine, and I'm so glad to have her on the show. And tonight we're going to be talking about accepting yourself. It's all about acceptance of yourself, whether it's emotionally, physically, intellectually, ethically, ethnically, whatever your heritage is, whatever it happens to be, it's all about accepting yourself. Just want to welcome everybody to the show.
Yeah,
we got Jillian who joined.
Welcome, Jillian.
Lots of other people. Thank you so much. We're on Facebook live stream. We're just getting used to this, so it's very cool. And so let's get this show started.
Yeah.
So Priya, welcome to the show. So tonight, our guest is Kim Chin. And Kim is an actor and playwright who is also Asian American. She grew up in Houston, Texas, and her play Reclaiming Vietnam, which I saw, and it's awesome. Her play Reclaiming Vietnam has been seen in Edinburgh, Scotland, the New York Fringe Festival, and this September it will be shown at the San Francisco Fringe Festival.
Nice.
The piece has recently been performed at colleges and universities and was seen last month at the New York Asian American Student Conference at NYU. Welcome
nice
to the
job.
Show, Kim.
Welcome, Kim.
Oh my gosh.
Let's get you on. Well, okay, let's get... No, go ahead. You can talk. I'm just going to get you on camera
great
here.
Thanks for having me. Wow, this is so exciting.
It's so nice
so
to have you.
So great to have you here. So Kim and I have known each other for years. We met through mutual friends. And Kim has always been a touchstone on my self-growth path and, you know, my path of sort of accepting myself. And one of the early episodes I mentioned Kim, in fact, one of the first episodes we did, it was called Sensitivity is Sexy.
Yeah.
And I was talking about in the episode how I've been a crier all my life and I've been ashamed about the fact that I cry and I'm, you know, this straight guy who cries. And I told the story how one time you and I were hanging out with some friends and I was emotional about something, going through a tough time.
Go figure.
Yeah, actually, it was a really tough time. I felt really vulnerable talking to everybody about it. And I started crying. And then I told everybody that I was ashamed that I was crying. I felt embarrassed. And you came up to me when we were all saying goodbye. And you gave me this big hug. And you said, I love your tears. And I've always remembered that.
Aww.
It was so healing to me, Kim,
aww,
that to this day, it's still a very meaningful story. And it's part of just some healing that you helped me do. So thank you for that.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Rob. That's
yeah
so sweet.
Yeah.
That's
great.
So nice. I remember that story now that you're mentioning it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Kim is a sensitive soul.
Aww.
And she's joining the playground tonight. And yeah, it's so good to have you here.
Oh, that's funny. Should I share a story about when I first met you?
Sure.
Sure. Especially if it has some good, you know, salacious juice or some skeleton.
It's not that salacious.
Yeah. The more embarrassing, the better.
Well, so we there was like some open mic night and I really wanted to sing and I think Rob really wanted to sing. And so we decided to, we found a song that was like a duet and then we sang it. We didn't know each other very well, but we sang it in front of each other. I think it was sort of a love song. It was sort of, or a breakup song.
Or no, it was the heart of the matter. That's right. I was thinking of this because I was thinking you being on the show. Yeah. We did a great job.
We
by
did.
The way.
We totally nailed it.
Yeah. And, Don Henley would be proud.
Yeah. Anyway, that was, it was just so much fun. And you were just so like easy to hang out with and like, just sort of like tonight you guys are, you know, I don't know, just, I like, you have good energy, Rob.
Thank you so much, Kim. You have good energy. Callie,
yes,
you have good energy. And
you.
Sam is on the board tonight.
Yeah, Sam
you
also
have good
has
energy.
Good energy.
All right, so Sam's lacking energy. We're going to try and help him out. But we're all in good energy tonight. And so, again, tonight we're talking about accepting yourself. And, Kim, since you are Asian American, and we haven't really addressed race on the show much,
yeah,
or really heritage. You know, Callie and I are Jews. And Sam's a Jew, and we really haven't talked about it much. So maybe you can talk about a little story, you know, background of your life and the arc of your life as far as being raised as an Asian American in America.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I'll, that's a really good question. I'll go back and say, so my dad is from Vietnam. My mom is from Buffalo. She comes from a European, she has a European background. I think she's third generation German, Scotch, Irish, French. And then my dad was born in Vietnam. They met in grad school in Pittsburgh. So, so it's funny because when I was growing up, I mainly grew up in neighborhoods or communities that were primarily white, and I didn't have a lot of exposure to like a more international community, except for the people who like lived with us, or my cousins who were refugees from Vietnam. So there was this feeling, and I think a lot of, I know I'm not alone in this, but just when you grow up with a lot of media images, dolls, my Barbies, my favorite TV characters, you know, everybody's white. And so there's this disconnect, like I'm surrounded by images of white people, white women, men, children, baby dolls. But when I look in the mirror, I don't fit this aesthetic. And it's disturbing. It's disturbing as a kid. You're like, why don't I look like this little baby doll who's supposed to be my baby? Why does it have blonde hair and blue eyes? Mm-hmm. And
did you broach that with your family? Did you talk about it inside your house?
Never. Not at all. It
just didn't come up.
It never came up. Mm-hmm. I remember remember when Cabbage Patch dolls were so popular?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I remember one of my good friends, I was about 7 years old, I went over to her house and she said, you have to come over. I have one of these coveted creatures. I have a Cabbage Patch and you know, you have to come over and see it. And so I went over, we had a slumber party and she brought it out and it was an African American Cabbage Patch kid. And she was like, look how cute it is. It's the cutest one they had. And I thought like, what?
That's not fair.
It's not the cutest one. You know, you're white. You're supposed to have a white baby.
Right,
so
right.
It was really amazing to me. Like, it blew my mind that she thought that was cute because I definitely had like the opposite reaction.
Mm-hmm. You're like, hello, Cabbage Patch Central. Yeah. What happened to the Asian kids?
Yeah.
Like, did they get lost or something?
I think maybe now they have them. I think they did come out with an Asian version.
Good.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, just to flash forward, because these topics and these hot buttons have been so pervasive for so long, you know, minority life in America. On all these levels, whether it's Barbie dolls or pop culture or whatever it is. And so the idea that even you still grew up and, you know, you're a young woman, but that recently you still experienced this is really a huge statement.
Yeah.
You know, about where we are.
Yeah.
And how far we've come or how far we haven't come.
Right.
You know.
And also how challenging to grow up where you couldn't even express that. You just didn't have the ability to express that about the confusion. Like, hey, like, where are you in the world? You know?
Yeah. And it's funny because it's not even confusion. It's just like, oh, I see. I don't belong. There's no place for me. Or, you know, until I remember very vividly, I was talking about this to a friend recently. I remember very vividly in junior high school, all of my friends were, most of my friends had just like light hair, freckles, red hair, blonde hair, whatever. And like the boys had crushes on them and I felt like nobody had crushes on me and I felt so jealous. And I remember thinking to myself, if only my mom had married a white guy, then I wouldn't have like dark skin. I wouldn't be brown. I wouldn't have this wide nose. I would probably have blue eyes. I would feel beautiful. I would feel like I fit in. And I grew up with like a real like self-hatred because I didn't like the body that I lived in. Mm-hmm.
So what does that do when you're a teenage girl or like a blossoming young woman, you know, for your self-esteem and just your ability to socialize and adjust and grow up?
Mm-hmm. I think that it forces you to do anything and everything to fit in all the ways that you can. You don't want to stand out as an individual. You want to conform absolutely as much as possible. If all the popular people are wearing this, then I need to wear designer jeans. If they're doing this and, you know, joining the soccer team, then I need to do that. It was about not self-differentiating, really just like trying to be the same and fit in as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there are challenges. And so we're going to talk more about that. I want you to know you have the cutest, great nose. So
I
like
your beautiful
nose. Yeah, you are beautiful.
Hopefully this is not a thing of the past, but we're going to get to all that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about more challenges being Asian American in America and also challenges that Cal and I will talk about when we get right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo woo!
What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Rob and Callie Show. We're always pushing the envelope on this show, people. want to welcome Terry, Lisa, Michael. Thank you so much for joining the Facebook live stream and everybody around the world. We got a bunch of countries, continents represented tonight. Yes. So it's really great. Tonight, we're talking about accepting yourself. Whatever your challenge is with yourself, it's all about self-acceptance. And tonight we have Kim Chin on our show, who's a good friend of mine, and she's talking about being Vietnamese American in America and some of the challenges of that. And before we went to break, Kim, we were talking about some of the challenges you had growing up, and, you know, maybe even some of the challenges you have now about being an Asian American in America.
So I was I wanted to also mention that because I was growing up at a time when, so the Vietnam War had shortly had just ended, and my my family sponsored a lot of people, especially my dad's brother's children and other cousins, and even people who weren't necessarily part of our family but had grown up in the same village as my father or my cousins. You know, they were sort of all treated as family. So we had a lot of people in our home, and it was kind of chaotic, but and it was also exciting. There were always people. Every night at dinner, there were like 20 to 30 people sitting around the table. Wow. It was huge.
Can you pass the potatoes? Yeah, it's going to take a little while.
But that's so beautiful that, you know, that just the idea that family is family, regardless, irregardless of blood or whatever, just because of the common experience. You know, it's pretty magical that they did that. Yeah.
Right. And my dad converted our house into, like, the attic became like a huge bedroom, and he made bedrooms in the basement. And so we just, there wasn't a lot of space, but we made space. Wow. You just make room. And on Sundays, they would do mass. They would put chairs in the living room, and they would, like, recite in Vietnamese, you know, Hail Mary, like, 100 times or however many times you're supposed to say it on the rosary. Oh, no. Oh, no. They're going to know. I don't know.
No judgment. Don't worry.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, at school, we were the only, there was one other Vietnamese family that I remember. And other than that, there were no other Asians. And I started to feel like, oh, I'm different. Oh, this is kind of weird. And these people have a funny accent. They have weird haircuts. They you know, they smell funny. They dress funny. They're not, like, as you get a little bit older, I was probably like, you know, 5 and then 6 and starting to realize, like, oh, wow, I'm, like, they're making me different. I'm not fitting in because everyone knows, oh, that's the house with all the Asian people. People at school would start to say, like, hey, are those guys related to you? Are those kids, you know, do you know them? I would say, well, I mean, I walked home with them. I was like, yeah, these are my cousins.
Everyone's a cousin. I used to do that when I illegally subletted apartments. This is my cousin, Maria. You know, always. It was always somebody's cousin. That's like the standard New York City, you know, kind of when you're breaking the rules for subletting apartments. Everybody's your cousin, you know?
Right.
So to that point then, you didn't feel any sort of similarity, given that, you know, what you had just said about feeling different before you, all these people were introduced to your life, given the sort of homogenized white existence you lived in before that point? Did it soften it when all these people showed up, or?
I was pretty young when they started showing up. I was about 4, so I didn't have much of I didn't really think about it too much, but it was once I got to school and I realized that people were looking at me differently that I started to resent it. Mm. So even though, like, there were a lot of great things about the culture and the food, and I didn't appreciate any of those things. I didn't want to learn the songs that they knew because if I was around them, it was fine, but I didn't want to sing them around other people. It was like something that I felt needed to be sort of a secret.
Yeah.
And even I think when we moved to Houston, I remember hearing the word or the phrase FOB and people saying, oh, that refers to fresh off the boat. That means if you're an FOB, they would say it. They would specifically point out kids who had really strong accents, and it was always Asians. And it was like a very derogatory term. And so that made me feel even more like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be associated with those people.
So you grow up and you have these inner challenges and sort of judging yourself, maybe having some prejudice against yourself or, you know, your background. Do you remember, and maybe I know we're going to get to Reclaiming Vietnam and your whole journey with that show and how that helped you accept yourself. But do you remember where there was a turning point in your life where one day you were like, fuck this, like, I'm just going to accept the fact that I'm Vietnamese or something. Do you remember that?
Well, I mean, it was much, much later. At one point, I was just talking about this with a friend recently, but when I first moved to New York, I had a boyfriend, and it was the funniest thing. He would say stuff like, wow, your tan looks great. Oh my gosh, your skin's getting so dark. You know, in Vietnamese culture, it's like, don't get a tan no matter what. Like, keep your skin light and pale because that's a sign of education and, you know, elevation.
Yeah. Similar in the African American culture too. There's a lot of those very, sort of layers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very strong. So so at that point, and he would say things about other, like, African American women and saying how beautiful their afros were and how beautiful their skin was, and that was the first time I'd ever experienced someone being so, like, happy and, like, I guess celebratory about someone's dark skin tone. I'd only heard of it, especially growing up in Texas, only heard of it in, like, very derogatory terms. So that was sort of an epiphany, like, what, this could be beautiful to some people. So that was, like, just this sort of a little bit of a turning point. And then it really wasn't until I decided to go to Vietnam, or actually until I was in Vietnam, I actually was planning on going to Ecuador or Mexico. I had a little bit of time off from, I was in between jobs and I had some money saved. And so I was researching like study abroad or volunteer programs in Ecuador. And I was talking to this woman. She was kind of a therapist at the time. And she was like, oh, you're going to go learn Spanish? Oh, you're going to learn about Mexican culture or Central American culture? How interesting. You know nothing about your own culture. And here you are. You don't know your own language. You don't know your own people. You don't know anything about it. And here you are. You're going to learn something. You're going to go and learn stuff that has nothing to do with you and your heritage.
Wow. Because you had no desire?
No.
There's no relationship still, no resonance whatsoever.
No. I had seen terrible, they had made us watch like a month's worth of footage from the Vietnam War when I was high school. It was so traumatic. I thought, I'm never going there. I just imagined just a war-torn country with people, you know, crawling around with no limbs, and honestly, that's what I expected. You know, just beat up buildings and ruins. I just thought of it as ruins, and all the everything you see that has to do with Vietnam, it's like platoon and the most horrific war stories. So I had no desire to go. And my dad didn't really, he had sort of expressed wanting us to learn Vietnamese when we were younger, but kind of gave it up. And he didn't have any hope that they would go back. It's interesting because they named me Kim, my parents, because they assumed that, so I was born in 75. They assumed that the Americans were going to win the war and that they would, my mom and dad were going to go back and be part of the, like, rebuilding. Because they were both, my mom taught English and they figured they would go back and buy a little farm and raise their children. So my name's Kim, so that, like, I could
to assimilate.
Yeah.
While you were there.
And then, you know, shortly after, I was born right after, I think the fall of Saigon was in April 75. I was born a few months later. And my brothers are named Daniel and David.
Wow, that's so interesting. So really directly tied to what was happening, you know, as you're watching history unfolding.
Yeah.
It's reflected in the names or how.
Yeah.
How American, westernized, I should say, your names are or not. That's interesting. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
So your therapist kind of puts you on the spot and you're like, oh yeah, maybe I'll learn a little about my heritage, and you decide to go there. And what happened when you went there?
Yeah. So I Googled volunteer programs in Vietnam, and it turns out there was this great, it just looked so nice. It was volunteering in orphanages with these little kids. And I thought, wow. And it was actually very cheap. The plane fare was expensive, but I thought, oh gosh, maybe she's right. Maybe I should learn a little bit about my own culture. And I was so scared. I was really afraid of what I would find. It just seemed so much easier to go to Central America or South America.
Yeah. What were you afraid that you were going to find separate from, was it more about what you were going to find internally or what, like unlocking maybe things that you didn't know you connected with your own culture or what you'd actually physically see based on what had just happened there?
I think more it was about feeling guilty about the war and taking with me the fact like, oh my God, I'm American and I've done this. Or there's a part of me that's like, I was the one, almost as if I was the one that dropped the bombs and that people would go, they were going to hate me, that they would throw rocks at me and tell me to go back, that I would just see such pain and poverty and devastation that I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Wow.
Those are sort of what I was thinking.
Mm. So you really were stuck between, I mean, what I'm hearing is sort of stuck in no man's land between like who you connected with. Sort of neither fish nor fowl, as my father would say, right? I mean, that's what I'm hearing. I'd rather, you know, hear it from you, but, you know, not really feeling fully connected with American culture, and certainly not, doesn't sound like you're accepting, or there was a little bit of self-loathing about your Vietnamese culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you do with that when you're a teenager or a young adult?
I mean, you just try to deny it. You just pretend like it doesn't exist. You pretend, you know, that you look like everyone else, and then you try not to look in the mirror. When you do, it's just like hate, like self-loathing words of like, you're ugly, you're terrible, you suck. Actually, you know, avoiding the
mirror.
You're
beautiful.
Or something,
you're great. Yeah. You're awesome.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say to all that.
Yeah, and also, I mean, on some level, it sounds like, and this is not to minimize your experience, because clearly it's a very specific and important experience, but there's also a part of me that just as a young girl connects with it, because, you know, you go through obviously the insecurities that a lot of kids do as they're growing up. You know, there's the idea of, even, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to fit in. I wasn't a cheerleader. I wasn't a blonde haired blue eyed. I was a little Jewish girl in a town that didn't have a lot of Jews. My minority was not worn out on my sleeve, so I can't compare it to, you know, your story. But I, you know, I didn't have enough of a working knowledge of my own culture. And yet I was often being asked to explain, like, why are you gone for this Jewish holiday? And what does that mean? In the process, what I was trying to do is get my mom to buy me like the same jeans that everybody had and sort of, you know, merge with all the cool kids. And I never was successful at it. So that kind of formed in me sort of a misfit kind of outlier thing, you know. So there's, and I can only imagine then when you have your story, it just exacerbates all of that, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is probably very, just sort of a teenage angst, not fitting in.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Plus then, but that's a big story.
Yeah. I didn't understand why all the other guys didn't have dreidels. I'm like, what, you didn't bring your dreidels? Like, what's wrong with you? And they're like, what's a dreidel?
I love that you didn't know.
Yeah. No, I had challenges being Jewish myself and just experiencing Jews when I was a kid.
You're just talking about J-Date, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, that came later, and that was a whole other prejudice against Jews. No. So it's like, you know, and when I say that I grew up Jewish, I don't necessarily mean the religion, although we did go to temple on the high holy days and stuff, and I did get bar mitzvah and stuff, because I'm more spiritual. I think I've always been more spiritual, but I do like the culture, the potato pancakes, the Yiddish, stuff like that, you know. But I had my own challenges being Jewish and not having a lot of Jews around. And if there were Jews around, maybe they weren't the nicest Jews and a little superficial for me. And, you know, now I have a lot of Jewish friends. I even have Jewish friends. No, but I have a lot of Jewish friends, and they're really menschy. They're down to earth people like me. And I've learned to kind of colorize my heritage instead of being prejudiced against it or seeing it as black and white, that, you know, all Jews are standoffish or materialistic or whatever I experience with certain people. I'm going to find that with any group of people. So I think it's all about that journey that we're all on to accept ourselves. So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Kim's going to continue her story that eventually led to her awesome play, Reclaiming Vietnam. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have an interest in marijuana, you want to know about marijuana, law, policy, and culture, then feel free to join me, Joseph A. Bondi, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning on my show, In the Know 420 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff, like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place, because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Rob and Callie Show here on talkradio.nyc. And we are also streaming live on Facebook Live, which is so fun to say because it just makes me feel cool. So we'd like to welcome Jody, Heyan, Allie. Welcome to the show. I know we also have someone in Guatemala City who's just joined us on the talkradio.nyc stream.
Hola,
so,
bienvenidos.
Oh, and someone thinks, someone's feeling real cocky about their Spanish today.
Yo necesito practicar más.
Sí, es muy necesario. But I digress. So we're here with Rob's very
Callie's
dear friend.
Just she's like, Rob, will you teach me how to speak Spanish?
You haven't heard my Spanish. Okay. Oh. All right. So I'm gonna surprise you.
The next
you
show we're gonna do all in Spanish.
We're gonna lose all our Spanish listeners.
Yeah. Though, did you hear Spanish? Did you hear those white people try to speak Spanish the whole show?
Yeah. Really.
Nah.
Yeah,
just put on a rerun.
Cute. Yeah. So we're here with Rob's very dear friend Kim Chin, who is a playwright, an actor, and happens to be an Asian American. We are talking about being a minority in America, what it means to find a place of self-acceptance when you're growing up. Kim has a pretty remarkable story we're in the middle of. If anybody would like to join us, you can call us at 877-480-4120. Or please feel free to share any comments or questions you might have via Facebook Live.
That's right, because we've entered the 21st century.
We have. I know. We're gonna be talking about this for a while.
Yeah,
we're very impressed with
ourselves.
We're liking it. Okay, enough about us. So Kim, before the break, Rob had mentioned we were talking about sort of the concept of self-loathing, right? And how there's a part of it that's common to a lot of kids as they're growing up, just because it's what happens, irregardless of your upbringing or your minority status. But then it gets exacerbated when you don't feel like you're here nor there, and you don't have anybody to really, like, you know, to connect with, right? So how long, when did you break out of that? Was there, like, I know, I think Rob started to ask you that earlier. Was there like a moment beyond the story you shared earlier where you recognized that maybe you felt differently about yourself, or you were capable of feeling differently about yourself?
Yeah, well, it was a very specific moment, and I think it was really going to Vietnam. And the most remarkable thing was the moment I set foot on Vietnamese soil, it was almost like I was hearing voices, and they were saying, "Welcome, you're back. You're back. We're so happy you're back." And I was like, "This is weird." But it just was like a mantra over and over again, like, "Thank you for coming. Wow. We're so happy you're here." Mm. Like, this is like, we've been waiting. It was the weirdest thing. And wow. I don't feel like I'm that type of person that's very, you know, I meditate and I work on prayer, but I don't actually, you know, I don't feel that I'm so connected in that way. But when I was in Vietnam, it was like constantly waves of like, welcome, and we're so happy, and thank you, and you're back. And it was almost like there were all these ancestors. It felt like there were ancestors that were like, "You're here. Yes, you're here."
That's
some
awesome.
Very important piece had dropped into place. It was the most remarkable
that
thing.
That is what, yeah.
It's
magical.
Almost like a spiritual shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to look around and to just every person I saw on the street, I was like, oh, wow, this is where I'm from. These are the people that like, these are my people. These are my people. And I was with, I was doing this program with a couple other volunteers, another American, she was white, and then two New Zealanders and an Australian woman. They were all white. And I always got the Vietnamese price at the market and and on the bus.
And everybody wanted to hang with you. Now everybody's down with Kim all of a sudden.
That's right.
So all of a sudden I was like, oh, wow, this is really fun that they accept me as one of them, that I belong. Mm. And people would say, you know, when I lived in France for a year in college, and people would say, you don't look American at all. You don't look white at all. You look totally Asian. And I would get so mad. And then when I was in Vietnam, people would say, you don't look white at all. You look totally Asian. And I would be like, yes, thank you. I look like you. Because they were saying, you look like us. Mm-hmm. You know, in France, they were saying, you don't look like us. And I felt like I belonged.
Yeah. Mm.
So that was, and also I was working at an orphanage, two orphanages, and those kids were amazing. Mm, yeah. And just seeing their little faces and being able to learn Vietnamese through them, because I'd never really learned it. I had a good accent though, because I'd grown up hearing it, but those little kids, they were just so endearing. Mm. It made me appreciate my own childhood, like my inner child, and it made me appreciate the culture and then everything that I loved about that country. It was like, that's me. This is me. I love that the people are so kind. I love that they're so generous. I love that they don't hold a grudge. I love that they welcome me even though they know I'm American. Mm. And so all of the positive things about the country, it was just like constant feedback, like, I'm a good person. I'm a good person.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
I know, that's amazing. I mean, that's so magical to have that kind of an instantaneous revelation like that.
Yeah.
And all the time that you spent depriving yourself, not that you were old enough to travel alone, but, you know, depriving yourself of that opportunity to connect like that, mm-hmm. until you got there. That's magical. I love that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, it's such a life-changing event. So your show, Reclaiming Vietnam, which I've seen, it's fantastic. It is so awesome. And I'm so proud of you for doing this one-woman show. For anyone who hasn't seen this, is it online at all, or you're still just doing it live?
Mostly live.
Okay. So eventually, hopefully, this is going to get to Broadway, or at least off Broadway. It's an incredible journey that Kim takes everybody on, going from the States and going back to Vietnam and her experiences working at the orphanage. There's a part of the show that you talk about, you broke your arm and they didn't reset it right, or they didn't set it right. And then you make an analogy about the bones not growing perfectly, but they still grew fine or something. Can you talk about that? Do you remember that part of the show?
Yeah, I do remember it.
Yeah, yeah, because you wrote it. Yeah,
that comes in handy.
Yeah, so I actually within 3 days of being in Vietnam, I was with a friend who recommended, actually, it's so funny, I'm going to see this friend for the first time since Vietnam. I'm going to see him this weekend at a wedding. But he had insisted that we rent motorbikes. I didn't really know how to drive one. He sort of showed me the ropes. I didn't really learn. And I crashed the moped. It was not a motorbike. It was a moped, like a little stupid little motorbike. And I crashed it. I broke my hand. I'm really lucky I didn't break my head, because I couldn't figure out where the brake was. I just panicked and I started speeding up instead of slowing down. I just crashed into a curb. I like flipped over. The bike landed on top of me. Anyway, I broke my hand and they put it in a cast. Luckily, I spoke French, because the doctors only, they don't speak English. They speak Vietnamese and French. And when I had it, so I was in Vietnam going to these orphanages with this stupid cast. And then when I went back to the doctor 6 weeks later, because I spent a little over two months in Vietnam, just exactly the amount of time that I had that hard cast on. And when I went back, it was still broken. So the part of the show, you know, I say, like, yeah, once a bone is broken, it's never the same. It's never the same. But it started to heal, not exactly in the right place, but there's already been a lot of healing. And the bone will grow stronger as you continue to use it. You know, someday you won't even notice. And yeah, that's definitely an analogy for feeling broken. You know, for feeling like broken and then sort of becoming whole again, and knowing that, you know, regardless of how of how broken you feel, that as you move forward, like time heals the wounds, and awareness of our past really helps us to accept ourselves and love ourselves. And so when I first broke the hand, I just was so angry all the time. And it was almost like this bone broke and there was like anger pouring out of it. I just felt constant anger and constant this feeling. The feeling of not belonging and not being whole just came up like 100 times stronger than it ever had in my life. So I really had to sit with that for quite a long time, because even when I came back to the States and had it checked out by a specialist, he was like, there's really nothing we can do. It's already started to heal, not in the right place, but there's no reason to go back, break it, put your hand in a cage, have all this scar tissue. You won't be able to use it. You're not gonna be able to work. I wasn't working at the time. I had no health insurance. So he was like, you know what, Kim, it's going to be fine. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. And so I had to really sit with that, you know, that anger and that just fear of not fitting in, not being whole. And also what I thought of it as I was healing it was, you know, Vietnam is a country with so many wounds and so much suffering, and the people have just endured so much. And the fact that I have this tiny broken, this little broken bone, like this is like my war. Mm-hmm. This is my battle scar. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how I like claim my heritage. And
and that you did it there.
Yeah.
That you broke it there in your country. Yeah.
And also you're one of the strongest women or people I know. So it definitely is an analogy for who you are.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah.
So what happens when you come back from a trip like that and you have these revelations and all this magic happens, you come back to the States, and what do you, how does that inform your life? Did things start to shift or did it take a while?
I think right away when I came back, so in the past people would always ask me, oh, have you been to Vietnam? Oh, you're half Vietnamese. That's amazing. Have you been there? Oh, I've been there. Like they would always say, I've been there. It's beautiful. The food is so good. The people are so wonderful. And I would say like, yeah, whatever. Leave me alone. Like, no, I haven't been there and I don't really care to go. And great, I'm glad you like the food. And now get out of my face. You know? So when I came back and I would say, you know, I was in Vietnam for 2 months, people would say, oh my gosh, what did you think? And I would just say, it was amazing. I loved it. It was so wonderful. And then when people would say, oh, have you ever been there? I would say, yes, I have. And it's amazing. And I had so much pride that I had been there.
Yeah.
And I started to look at myself in a new way. And it wasn't instantly, but definitely over the course of like a year or 2 years, I just felt like, oh yeah, I'm Vietnamese. And I'd never really said that to myself on those, you know, checklists that you fill out when you're, I don't know, immigration or college. I would always put other, or I would check white, because I would well, I want to be thought of as white because that's the better race. That's the more like, that's the, hey, who are we kidding? That's the elite race. I want to be one of the elite. Thank goodness I can claim that because of my mom. Mm-hmm. You know, I never wanted to say that I was Asian or Vietnamese. So that changed when I came back. I was really, it became something I was really proud of.
It's almost like, I guess it's just an example for anyone who's avoiding a part of themselves, whatever it is, whatever part they're ashamed of or they don't want to face. And then once they face it, they find that they just feel more of who they are, whether it's more peace of mind, whether it's more self-acceptance, or in your case, joy. It sounds like that trip brought you so much joy to just experience the homeland that your dad came from, and that's also a part of you.
Yeah.
Cool. So with that, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have some takeaways. We're going to talk more about Kim's show. And thank you so much for watching, and thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
Hello, this is Mark Torres.
And Pronto Comics own Dominic Sperano.
And listen to our show, It Came From the Radio, right here on talkradio.nyc, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we talk about entertainment, movies,
comic books, and other news.
So make sure you check us out. That's right here, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Wednesday, talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our final quarter of this edition of The Robin Cali Show here on talkradio.nyc. We're also live streaming on Facebook Live. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hope. Welcome, John. Welcome, Amy. Welcome, Carly. It's so fun to
you sound like
everybody.
Romper Room. And I want to thank Carly, and I want to thank Michael.
I lived for that
oh
show.
Oh, my God.
Wonderama,
I love that show when
hey,
I was a kid.
Let's date
Kim,
ourselves.
Kim, you didn't have Romper Room in Texas, did you?
We did. I do remember Romper
National,
Room, but I can't remember.
I was okay. I wasn't sure if it was local.
I think
yeah.
it might be more that she might be too young for it.
Yeah.
That's really what we're trying to
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
It's not a geographical
That's
thing.
Right.
It's an age thing.
That's right.
So we're here with Rob's very dear friend, Kim Chin. We're talking about race in America, at least Kim's experience being Asian American growing up here and not and finding an identity or lack thereof when you were a younger girl, and then going to finally find yourself in Vietnam in a way that you hadn't expected. You know, one of the things I wanted to touch on, especially because this is our final quarter before we talk more about your show, is, you know, we're talking about self-acceptance, and we all have our versions of some sort of self-loathing or sort of a, you know, displaced identity. I'd be curious to hear what you have to say to people, regardless of what version of that they're experiencing, whether it's a, you know, a cultural issue or just a personal issue. What do you, you know, what do you suggest to people when it comes to sort of finding your place, finding your people, finding your home? Because it's really an internal thing, ultimately.
Yeah.
Even if it's sparked by an external experience, right?
Right. And I think that I used to think it shouldn't matter. I should be seen for the human being that I am, regardless of what I look like. We should all just be colorblind and totally accepting unconditionally. What I learned is that, you know, what we look like, it does represent a big portion of who we are. And our ancestry is important. Our ethnicity, our cultures, like these are things that really enrich everyone's life.
Yeah.
So it is, even though I in some ways I think it, I feel like we should just not worry about any of how people look, but I think for me it was really important to it was really important to go back to my roots. And it sounds very cliche, but I guess for all people, you know, okay, I'll just illustrate something. I was recently, I do this online dating thing, and there was a fellow who was obviously Indian. He had very dark skin and like very good looking guy. And it said, under his ethnicity, it said white.
Maybe it was a typo.
Yeah.
I texted him and I just said, hey, I see that you like, hi, I'm Kim. I liked your profile.
Yeah.
And I see that you wrote, you know, I see that you wrote white. And I was just, you know, maybe this sounds really racist of me, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, why is that? Or, you know, do you not identify as Asian or Indian? And he wrote back this his response was like, yes, you're a racist. My mom is white or something, or my dad is white, and I don't identify as Indian, you know, and have a nice day. And and I just felt like, you know, I was like that for so much of my life, but I felt that he was really missing out on something. I felt that by not embracing and just not accepting, like, you know, who he was, that I was like that person on the other side saying like, oh, but it's really cool.
Right.
You know, why not talk about it? You know, maybe he just had really dark skin and, you know, maybe he was really sick of people saying that, but I don't know.
I had the same problem in online dating. I would check small nose and people were like, your nose is not small. You got a big nose, dude. And so I gained self-acceptance for my nose.
I think that's what it is.
I'm proud of my nose. I got a big, great nose.
Exactly. I mean, what we see, it's more important than we want to let that we... In an ideal world, when the aliens come and they make us all the same, and we're, you know, then our souls will really shine through. But in this moment, you know, while we still have these human bodies, I think what we look like is a big part of who we are.
Yeah.
So what's it like for you nowadays being Asian American in America?
Well,
and go.
Yeah.
For me, being Asian American.
Just a minor question.
Wait, I'm Asian American? It's a white person's world. It's still a white person's world. I think I'm extremely lucky to live in New York City, where I feel like I belong, you belong, everybody belongs, everyone here fits, you know, that doesn't happen everywhere else. In fact, very few other places, I think, people feel like they fit in as much as New York City. So I'm lucky to live here. I'm lucky to live in a place where we can talk about it, you know, where like you even have a show where you consider it important enough to have it as a topic.
We waited a while.
Well,
we did, you know, at least I could speak for myself, maybe because I never know as a white woman in America, I don't know that I can do it the kind of justice that, you know, that right. maybe somebody else can.
Yeah.
So we kind of tippy-toed around it a little right. bit.
And the great thing about our show is that we come up with topics organically. I saw Kim a couple weeks ago. Yeah, we should have her on the show. What are you going to talk about? Oh, she's Asian American. We haven't talked about race. It's like, that's the kind of show we have.
Yeah.
We just dovetail one episode to another sometimes.
But, you know, there's something that you said, though, it's just sort of hitting me now. Maybe one of the answers, and again, like, it's such a politically and culturally and socioeconomically charged country and world right now. You know, it's tricky, and political correctness on some levels has, you know, gone to a whole new place, maybe at the expense of us remembering to identify with our differentness and just remembering that we can, it sounds very trite, but that, you know, there's something to be said for embracing who you are and what your culture is, and then also living peacefully and curiously and lovingly cohabitating with somebody who's different right next door, you know, rather than trying to homogenize things or the other extreme, which is being too nationalistic and only staying with your own kind or living with your own, you know, your own tribe and your own neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there is some middle ground that we can do a better job of. You know, I mean, the way you just sort of characterize that, you know, the idea of really suggesting that maybe we all get in touch with our culture a little bit more. Like, I think, you know, for me, again, and also for Rob, the closest I can relate to this is being Jewish. You know, that's
right.
where my minority blood is. And I'm not I'm not very self-aware as a Jewish person culturally in my soul. But sometimes I was in a conversation very recently with a group of people that were Israelis and a few very Zionistic Jews. And I told them, I said, I don't even know how I can participate in this conversation because of my lack of experience or lack of resonance. And I want to.
Yeah.
So even this conversation is making me realize maybe I need to dig a little bit deeper. So thank you for that.
Mm,
you know,
that's nice. Yeah.
Doesn't mean I'm still not going to crash every Christmas dinner that I can find. Just want to be clear about that.
That's right. So I was thinking maybe you could talk, because one of the things that really touched me that you talked about in this episode was not being able to look in the mirror, which I think is one of the most important things for human beings to be able to do.
Yeah.
'Cause if I can't look at myself in the mirror, I'm not going to be able to really feel good about myself, but also look at anyone else,
yeah.
like really see them as well.
Yeah, figuratively and literally.
Yeah. I mean, the mirror actually, it sounds so corny, I know, but it's true. It's such a powerful thing in life. And we're all like mirrors to each other. So that being said, maybe you can talk to a 12-year-old girl who is of a different ethnicity than being white, or has any challenge looking in the mirror. What advice would you give to her?
Wow, that's so beautiful, Rob. I think If I could say anything to that 12-year-old girl who doesn't necessarily, you know, I think maybe this is a women's issue, but no matter what you look like, you know, if you're blonde, blue-eyed, all these things, I don't necessarily think that any 12-year-old girl, excuse me, I'm going to clear my throat. I don't think that any 12-year-old girl really feels worthy or beautiful. I think all of us, I mean, as women, it's just so difficult because we're bombarded by images of what beauty is supposed to be. And I think corporate America or the media, commercialism really thrives off of people having low self-esteem, and women do more of the shopping in most of the world. So appealing to a woman's need to fit in is really like the job of a lot of media, ads and movies and songs. And I think just, I read this great quote a couple of years ago. It's not exact, but it's something like, self-love, like a woman loving her body is the first step towards real revolution. Mm. And I think that's right absolutely true, because we're constantly told not to love ourselves, that we're not enough, that we don't look the part, that we're, you know, we need to be different. We're not enough. We need more embellishment or surgery or higher heels, you know, whatever. It's just to be able to, for a young woman to be able to look in the mirror and say, I'm owning this. I'm amazing. I'm beautiful. I'm wonderful. It doesn't matter what I see around me. It doesn't matter what other people say. I'm owning this. I'm beautiful. I love myself. And that's an act of rebellion. Mm. I'm going to do this.
And to awesome. Find the piece that's different, you know, that's unique unto all of us, because there's something that we're all here on this planet to do that no one else can emulate, you know. And I think that helps to just sort of grow that inner beauty, you know, sort of fake it till you make it, till you really find yourself being more self-accepting.
Yeah, right on.
Totally.
So we're getting to the end of the show. Quickly, where can people find out more about Reclaiming Vietnam?
Yeah. So I have a website, www.reclaimingvietnam.com. You can also find, I have a Facebook page, Reclaiming Vietnam. I have, my Twitter handle is @KimB, as in Barbara, Chin, @KimBChin, and you can hashtag Reclaiming Vietnam to find out more about it. Also, San Francisco Fringe, if you go to their website, you'll see I have 4 shows that are coming up in September. So I think,
nice.
That's it.
That's
I want to see the show.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Thank you so much
for being
a guest on our show, Kim.
Thank you,
so
guys.
Good
so
to
nice
have
to
you on.
You. This is amazing.
And we want to just...
Here, let me get that for you.
That's right. Get that straight. Thank you, everybody, for watching on Facebook Live. Thank you for listening so much. We really appreciate it. Take care, y'all.
Thank you.
Bye.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo! Woo!
What's that?
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on talkingalternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.